Peacock is streaming your favorite shows, movies, live sports, breaking news, exclusive originals, and every live WWE pay-per-view. It's The Office, Chrisley Knows Best, and Peacock original shows like Punky Brewster. Peacock, watch for free, upgrade for more. Stream now at PeacockTV.com.
USA podcast where we put you on the map. This is Ron Costa broadcasting live in the Mappable USA studios in Las Vegas, Nevada. And folks, if you're an accredited investor or even an unaccredited investor, you're going to want to listen to this podcast. A lot of new rule changes and everything. We're going to talk about that. But before we do that, let's bring on Vicky Hutchmala from the World Token Market. Vicky, how are you doing today?
I'm outstanding, Ron. As always, it's a beautiful day in Vegas, and we have a new guest. Today, we're going to talk about an old subject, crowdfunding, in a new and different way. So let's go.
Exactly. 6 degrees of separation. That's how we got the guest, right? I love it. It's so funny.
Exactly.
Folks, yeah, let's introduce Adam Pressman. Adam's the CEO of Crowdfund Roundup. Adam, how are you doing over there today?
I am doing very well. It's a beautiful sunny day outside of the nation's capital as well.
Excellent.
Excellent. You're close to where all the decision-making is done. I love it. Right? Washington, D.C. So how long have you been there for?
Most of my life.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Well, Adam, we have a great podcast in store. I'm really happy that you took the time out to speak to our audience and everything. But before we get into the meat of the subject here, why don't we take a little bit of background on you. Tell us your story and how you got to be where you are right now.
Certainly, and thanks for the opportunity, both of you. I got into capital formation, sort of backed into it as I had been about 10 years into my 20-year business coaching career, when suddenly it was harder for the businesses and individuals that I was helping to pay for the transformations for which they had me assisting. Banks weren't lending. It was a very tough credit environment. And another business consultant and I, who's a founding member of Crowdfund Roundup, put together Crowdfund Roundup to sort of see how some changes that were coming, that wasn't yet legal in the U.S. to do crowdfunding, but we had seen what was going on abroad, how that would change the capital formation landscape and perhaps allow for more people to dictate the terms on their own to make sure they get the funding that they required. And I have no disrespect for banks and what they do. Their banking is going to be necessary forever, but it's such a highly regulated environment and it requires that kind of regulation to be safe that it's good that there's some opportunities. And the really exciting part is what's been happening in the last year or so. Crowdfund Roundup is about 10 years old, and I would say what we're doing now with what we call Regulation CF Plus is easily our most exciting thing to date.
Very
good. Yeah, Regulation
CF.
You're taking a product, Reg CF, similar to people call like the Reg A Plus, right? That people refer to that a lot of times with the Reg A Plus. I've never heard the CF referred to as the CF Plus, though. So
it's because it isn't. That's our trademark. Yeah. We're adding this capability to regulation crowdfunding. Regulation crowdfunding is a named part of law. And what we've recognized is with the changes done by FINRA and the SEC back in March, it has really gained potential and really gained value. Hence, it's actually, I believe it was Irwin Stein, one of your prior guests, moniker Reg CF Plus. So that's what we're calling it.
Well, give us a little idea of the difference and what aspects you've added to make it a plus.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. Regulation crowdfunding is the kind of direct investor engagement that was made legal by the Jobs Act to allow people who are seeking funding for their businesses to post on a licensed website an offer to general public investors. And it's been around for about 6 years. And what it's designed to do is provide a way for, as I said, direct engagement with those investors. Platform, pick what it is they wish to in, pick how much they're going to invest, escrow the funds there on the platform, and assuming all goes correctly and everybody closes the deal, that investment goes forward, the investors' funds are taken and then used by whoever put the deal up on the site. We call them an issuer. They have that issuer gets funded that way. It's usually a very fast, pretty much a very inexpensive, among the least expensive ways to do it. It isn't free, and it isn't necessarily easy, because fundamentally what you're doing is converting your social capital to working capital. You're taking your friends, your fans and followers, and asking them for money. It's a great idea. The problem is it was hamstrung early on by a number of things. It made it very, very hard for people who were actually good at investing in startups to even participate. There were hard limits on it, and it was difficult for them to invest in one deal versus another. And the other thing is that the people who were not particularly sophisticated investors, who may have never invested in a startup before, were reluctant to do so because they didn't have somebody to follow who might be a very good expert in startup investing. The last thing, and the thing was actually touted the most when the law changed in March, was the limit was pretty low. You could only raise about a million plus the expenses of getting it. Now that limit has been raised to $5 million, which really hasn't affected the kinds of people looking for money there. Very few people were even looking for more than $1 million. But what it has done is allowed for a higher quality of crowdfunding professionals, attorneys, business brokers, marketing companies to get in the game, because the raises now can afford to pay for higher quality talent. So what we call Regulation Crowdfunding Plus was our approach to leveraging these law changes in the following ways. Because accredited investors can participate with what I'm going to call investors, because more often than not, they're either the customers or soon will be for this venture, as well as wanting to invest in it, because they can now work together, we have a situation where investors who may be reticent about investing in a startup because they're not sure they'll get their money back, they can see that somebody who's done this before has agreed it's a good deal and has put, frankly, the bulk of the money up themselves. That makes them great coattail followers, and that's been a traditional way to get investments funded for decades, if not centuries by now. So the retail investor, the unaccredited investor, loves the fact that accredited investors can get in the game. Accredited investors, on the other hand, are so accustomed to dealing with a lack of information or varied information from each issuer who individually maintains that investor relationship with them. Now they get to have a third-party intermediary, a FINRA, that's the regulatory body that does this, a regulatory body licensed portal has to post this issue. So some of the due diligence, all of the credibility checking of the issuers to make sure they're not bad actors, et cetera, is part of that platform's responsibility. And so there's a third-party intermediary, and that also helps protect the accredited investor. And many of these deals, certainly the expensive ones, are going to be subject to a financial review, giving these accredited investors a lot more insight into, yes, this deal was looked at by a CPA, it's very likely to be correct, and more to the point, it follows generally accepted accounting practices, or it wouldn't have been survivable of an audit, so that they can look at the information and see, because a lot of investors are looking at three deals a week, everything starts to look the same, and they begin to see patterns emerging of the ones that are most worthy. So with better financials possible, with better information out there, both sets of investors can find a lower risk solution. And that means they're more amenable. If they're more amenable, it means that when you send out an email message saying, hey, I've got a great new venture, are you willing to invest in it? They're more likely to do so. And because with accredited investors putting up tens and 20s and 50,000s, you need fewer of them. One of the big problems in regulation crowdfunding, RCF, as it's been up till now, is it takes tens of thousands of dollars to find enough investors at $500 a piece to make the deal go through. So now we're able to reduce those prices. I've been able to see with some of my investors on our research team since the March law change that we can go out there and kind of full-throatedly say, probably going to cost about half what it cost up until then to get, say, $1 million from a mix of both investors.
So, Adam, if a company wants to go through the process, comes to you, what do you do? What's the process of getting the company from contacting you to into their launch of crowdfunding?
I'm so glad you asked, Vicki. We have put together a process based upon our examination of the two key aspects in converting your social capital to working capital, which is putting together a good offer and making sure the right people see it. Putting together a good offer means that our investment banker, our broker dealer, and our securities attorney, who have done literally thousands of these, they've done billions of dollars in capital formation over 40 years, each one of them. I'm the one in the group that's got a small amount of experience, and for some reason they put me in charge. But we put together the right deal. For example, a lot of people think all they have to sell. I was just talking to a guy earlier today who didn't want to part with equity in his company, and he thought crowdfunding wasn't for him as a result. I said, you don't need to part with equity. A revenue royalty deal where, say, a dime on every dollar sold is often a great way for particularly higher margin ventures to get funded. There's no loss of equity. And from the investor's perspective, he gets paid on revenue. He doesn't have to wait for a company to be profitable before he gets paid. So in a lot of cases, structuring the deal in a different way than straight equity makes sense. Our professionals know that, and they're going to counsel the applicant on exactly how to structure his deal so the broadest variety of people that he wants to be investors are going to accept it. That's a very crucial thing I just said, the kinds of people he wants to be investors. Investors are with you for the long haul. It's kind of like a marriage. You want to be sure it's somebody you can live with. So we work with entrepreneurs to figure out who the best fit for them from an investor perspective is. Our research arms run wide and deep, and we're able to find people, investors, that have specifically said, we're willing to invest in this kind of a project, or we've done it before. Which means when we do have a great offer, we can put it in front of investors and get, say, a 1-to-4 close ratio instead of a 4-in-100, which is the typical approach of just blasting an email out to every investor on the planet. So it's a mix of putting together a great offer, finding the right marketing company and market research to identify the right investors, and then putting that message out to them. The last thing we do is we've got the campaign rolling, and let's say we've got half of it. But we need the rest, and the company doesn't have the funding. Some of our marketing partners and some of our other advisory partners are willing to make a short-term loan to that organization to get them over the hump so that they get the full issue, and then that issue, of course, pays back exactly what that loan was. In short, before crowdfunding, broker-dealers used to have a sales force that would go out and sell investors on what needed to be, what was on their list that needed to be sold. That sort of went away, which is a good thing, but all the marketing companies do is build buzz for it. Somebody has to be on the end of the phone talking to investors and making sure they get commitment. That's what we do. We're an investment sales organization, and we do it in a way that we're acting as the issuer because that's the way the law requires it. So we're agents of the issuer working on their behalf. They are the ones who pay us so that we get their deal closed. Because right now on some 60 crowdfunding portals that are out there, I see lots of deals that are 6, 8, 10, 12 months old. None need be on there any longer than 3.
So how important would you say the marketing aspect of crowdfunding is to the success of the project?
Crucial. There's no single thing that's going to hurt more than bad marketing. And one of the problems is that we try to address is people will go to a crowdfund marketing company, and as good as they are, they can't sell a bad offer. But they're not in the offer creation business. That's what a legal team, an investment banker team like what we have here at Crowdfund Roundup does. We've decided to make sure there's no finger pointing going on. We're going to make sure our marketing group and our investment banking and research group are aligned so that nobody can say, well, it was a bad offer. That's why the marketing campaign didn't work. Or the offering guy say, you didn't market it correctly. That happens a lot. We don't want that kind of finger pointing getting in the way of your success.
Well, what would you say, how would you differentiate the type of investor and the way of investing. Let me kind of qualify that. I think the pandemic has put a lot more impact on investing and a lot more people interested in it because they had the time to look at it and they, you know, got into it, and now everybody wants to invest in something or other. Mm-hmm. What have you seen in terms of the types of investors and what they're investing in and why?
Well, again, because of the new laws, we're able to address the gamut of investing options out there. We're able to work with people that really know what they're doing, family offices, professional investment houses, institutional investors that have years of experience and rows of bench space of people who know exactly what they're doing. We're able to mingle them in now with lots of people who, as you just described, you know, like Shark Tank, want to get in the game, don't really have a lot to put in there, but want to be part of something. And these are the same people, by the way, that'll work on the more charitable functions of group capital, for example, the GoFundMes and WeFunders. They've probably helped friends out. They understand that maybe they helped their struggling restaurant during the pandemic stay open. These people see the power of small amounts of money aggregated over a large crowd. So putting the two together has been actually a blessing for us because, well, before we had to go, you know, if only we could talk to these people about your deal, we would get this thing through, but the law just doesn't allow that. We're now able to do that. And again, we've been doing this for so long that we have it easier than a lot of people. One of our guys can take a look at a particular issue. We had said one this past week and said, this should be this kind of structure. We're going to market it to these kinds of investors because I've done this 17 times and 16 of them we got through by doing it that way. So that's sort of a leg up that we have. Not everybody can do it, so it is harder for other people to sort of differentiate what kind of investors they want and what kind of investors are going to actually be successfully connected to them. Does that help?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, you mentioned Shark Tank before. Adam, I think maybe you should have a seat next to one of these guys, next to Mr. Wonderful or something, you know, give another fresh perspective on one of these days. I'm going to see you on that show, I have a feeling. But
I don't know. I'm told I have a face for radio, so, you know.
that's why I do the podcast, too.
Exactly.
Yeah. No video on a podcast. But anyway, listen, you mentioned a few things. One is, you said a lot of these issuers come up to you and they say, well, I don't want to give up equity, and you have to explain that there's another way to do that. So that's kind of interesting. I'm wondering, do the investors come up to you and say, you know, do they understand Reg CF to begin with, or Reg A, or whatever? I mean, there's a lot of options out there,
yeah.
But what's their educational level at this point? Do they know what equity crowdfunding is?
But by now, I think most of them do. There's still some confusion out there. One of the things that we're blessed with is the five-man team at Crowdfund Roundup 2 also teach. You've had one of them on your show, Professor Erwin Stein. So these guys are accustomed to working with a starting at zero level of education. And again, 40 years in the business, if you think people lack sophistication in investing now, you should have seen it in the 60s. So, I mean, it just really wasn't done by everybody. You know, you think the Cleaver family did any investing? It just wasn't done. So now it's very common. And I work with wealth planners constantly who are trying to find ways to deal with investment in self-directed IRAs. And while there's never a time when I'm going to say investing in a startup is a good idea for your retirement or for putting your kid through college, the reality is an education in how to diversify your portfolio to perhaps include that when the time is right is absolutely something I'm 100% behind. And the very highly regulated, and thankfully so, investment advisor space is learning about the value of these kinds of investments and some of the ways that we've been able to gradually lower risk over time to get these things actually meaningful to people who don't really want to invest because they're afraid of the risk that's out there. It was some years ago, I haven't checked on the numbers lately, but when European crowdfunding had predated the U.S. by some years, and the number two crowdfunding platform out there was in the Dutch company, did the research and found the level of fraud in crowdfunding was far less than the level of fraud in any other kind of investment. And so while the opportunities are out there and we're reading about issues every day in crowdfunding. Remember that when you're reading something that's in the news, it's in the news because it's news. It doesn't happen every day. So
a lot of businesses
are leveraging this. It's a multi-trillion-dollar marketplace out there, and it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, Erwin Stein's sort of one of our visionaries, and he's saying in a number of years he thinks this might supplant going to a bank and getting an SBA loan as the number one means of business capital. And if you think about it long term, if you recognize that a restaurant that wants to expand is most likely to get customers who want to see that restaurant there on their block to go forth and make that happen, it makes perfect sense to me, as opposed to a disinterested bank that, you know, is sort of lending for the interest rate.
Absolutely. No, that's an excellent point, because the mindset of the investor also is a little bit different in crowdfunding, I think, because these guys, like you said before, they like the product, they want the company to succeed, and I don't think that they're the kind of people who you would consider, let's say, day traders, right? They're in it for a long haul. They want it, right? So that's got to eliminate a lot of this crazy trading that you mentioned, or any kind of a bad actors or whatever that is. So the fact that the investor wants the company to succeed and likes it, is a huge part of, I think, possible success in this stuff, and it certainly makes sense for the issuer. But with that said, and maybe this is something that you talked about earlier as well, crowdfunding hasn't really been that successful at the start. And to point to a real successful raise, it was hard to do for a while now, but that's not the case anymore. I mean, people are seeing success stories at this point, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like anything else, it takes some time, particularly in a highly regulated environment with a very complicated product or service, which is what this thing ended up being, mostly due to the regulations. It was hard for it to do. And I have to commend some of the folks like Start Engine and WeFunder too, as well as MicroVentures and some of the folks in the accredited investor space, for taking this thing forward. But the funny thing is, you see those ones that did this, it wasn't that they broke away from the traditional way of capital formation. They embraced what was necessary to do so, and then layered on the new things, because raising money involves making some decisions and following some measures of success that have been true for decades, if not centuries. And you're not going to eschew that. I see a lot of folks in the blockchain and cryptocurrency crowd saying banks are evil, and we're going to make all banks go away. And those people, they're not going to see their dreams come true. There will always be banking. There may not be bankers, but there will always be banking, because it works. And there's always going to be a stock market of some kind where these kinds of things are sold. I think it was the Dutch that did it back in the 1600s. And it has been roughly the same ever since, as far as how to invest in companies. And we're delighted to have that, because it means that we can look at ebbs and flows in crowdfunding and recognize this is a part of any new financial methodology. And so people who might have been discouraged 3 years ago are starting to see the traction that's coming up. But at the same time, a big gap has happened. The crowdfunding was designed to remove the professional investment salesperson who usually worked for a broker dealer and did a great job of that, and it saved money as a result, at least 10% of the cost of money. The problem is nobody stepped in to take their place. The platforms aren't allowed to sell it. And issuers who may be great at selling their product or service don't really know how to sell securities. So there became this gap, and that's where what the plus fills is. We step in and say, we're going to be your sales team. And we don't work like the broker dealers. We're not paid on commission. You know, we're working on a fee basis with the issuer involved. But that's how we get paid. As far as how to get people to negotiate favorably to your investment, that's pretty much the same.
Correct. Yeah, I got that. You know, another thing that you mentioned too, which leads me to my next question, is the portals that you mentioned, or where these offerings reside. You said that they all have to be licensed. Like, who does the licensing on these portals?
FINRA is the regulatory body that licenses the portals, make sure they follow the recommendations and requirements of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Virtually all of this, and again, I'm no lawyer, you had one on before, but I talk to one every week. The SEC has made these exemptions to a very old Securities Act, and this is one of several of those exemptions, and that's what the Regulation C, Regulation Crowdfunding, is one of the exemptions that allows for this to take place. And it's designed to protect people from fraudulent offerings. which sort of baffles me because the SEC and or anyone else in the federal government will regulate how much somebody can walk into a building down the hall from you guys and blow their college fund on gambling. But I think it's because people understand what gambling is. This isn't gambling, and the SEC knows it. This is supposed to be serious fundraising. That said, an awful lot of the people who put platforms out there say, you know, well, if we make it, they will come. You know, they stick the platform up there, they take some issuers, and nothing. And we've seen, frankly, the majority of the regulation crowdfunding sites, those registered by FINRA, aren't doing gangbuster money. You know, I talked to three this week, and two of them agreed that, you know, one said we're doing great, but it's only been since December, and they are doing great, you know, since that's running only since December. To do that during the pandemic is fantastic. But a lot of them are doing very poorly, and the reason is they don't know how to sell these things.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
more to the point, their issuers don't know how to sell these things.
Well, the issuers don't know how to do it. But now here's the next interesting point. Now, once the platform is licensed, if I come up to that platform and say, hey, I have a Reg CF Plus project I want to list on that site, doesn't that organization have to vet me out as well, vet my deal from start to finish?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
And they're even required to, and a lot don't realize this, to make sure it's a viable business plan. I mean, they have to really look at it.
Okay, and, I agree. Now, okay, where I'm going with this is you mentioned before, some people say, well, you know, we couldn't sell it because it was a bad deal. It was a bad deal. Well, if it's a bad deal and it can't be sold, wouldn't the vettors know it's a bad deal and not put it on their platform to begin with? Or are they at the mercy of the marketing staff and the people who don't know how to sell the issuance to begin with?
I think it's probably a little of both and something else. You have to understand that there is a wide variety of institutional knowledge amongst these platforms. Almost all of it is significantly less than what you would find at a Goldman Sachs, a Morgan Stanley, you know, a traditional investment research and investment banking firm. One of the reasons we put together Crowdfund Roundup the way we did is we specifically took these old school professionals. In fact, we have an investment banker, we have a broker dealer, and we have a securities attorney on staff, all of whom did this for at least four decades before they came to us to say, all right, I see this as something new. Let's get this thing working right. A lot of them aren't like that. They're professional marketeers, and then they started the platform or something. A few of them were done by lawyers. You know, what do lawyers know about investing? there's been a wide variety of knowledge out there. And because it's a regulated business and every platform has to function the same, while that's a good thing in one perspective, it's a bad thing in that anybody who's got about $10,000, maybe at the most $20,000 to spend, can become a regulation crowdfunding portal, whether they have any experience doing it or not. And so that's why you're seeing these situations where on some platforms there are deals that simply couldn't fly. There are others that are doing fantastic because they either have that institutional knowledge or they've brought people in to cater to their investors, their issuers, to do all that work for them.
Right. Okay. And then the last question I had for you was, isn't there another option for issuers where they want to put their offering online? Couldn't they do it on a private label basis on their own website and have that approved instead of going to a portal?
They absolutely can. And the issue with that is that limits the kinds of investors that they can allow to participate. That's the golden ring that the accredited investors have on the carousel. And so because of that, in fact, that is the lion's share of how this is done, because it is so much easier to put together a deal and directly engage investors. A lot of firms do just that. The problem is doing it legal requires a great deal more in introspection and inspection. Irwin tells me preparing a deal is about four times more expensive in what's called Regulation D exemption, which is that's called Regulation D crowdfunding, or what's often known as just equity crowdfunding, because for the first 6 years of it, that's really the only place equity was changing hands. It wasn't until the laws got codified and RCF platforms emerged that we were able to see what we see now, which is non-accredited investors being able to participate. So, that's how we function in our Syndicate Path and our Equitize. Those platforms are both Regulation D portals. We find investors for companies that themselves are going to directly engage. It's great, you know, it works very well, but it doesn't allow the regular consumer, the friend, family, or fan of a business, and who might not be seeking a lot of money, to participate and make that business move forward. For that, regulation crowdfunding is perfect, and our plus component of it means that we can now have the accredited investors in there too.
So, Adam, do you see any kind of collaboration with traditional sources of funding, like maybe SBA loans or new types of funding like tokenization on the blockchain?
I certainly the former I'm doing every day. In fact, I rarely go out looking for issuers myself. I find business brokers, realtors. We do a lot of work in real estate. At this point, a very good commercial real estate broker can look at a building and say, well, I can get 3% of that by, you know, selling it tomorrow, or I can buy it with other people's money. And while 2 years ago, when I started marketing Syndicate Path in our area, that was a $40,000 chunk to do. Now it's probably closer to 10 for him to do that. As far as tokenization, sure, tokenization is basically just making it, it's a different kind of security, but make no mistake, in almost every case, it either is or soon will be ruled a security, and a lot of people are trying to skirt the law to do that. Again, I'm no lawyer, but anything that you can securitize, you can break into little pieces and sell as its own item, to me is something that should be regulated and handled this way. I think the fact that we could take any kind of payment is important, but other than that, it really comes down to people who know what their businesses need are great sources for customers for me. And one of the things that we learned early on is that business brokers, management consultants, incubators, CPAs and attorneys all do a lot of work to get a business prepared to go out for a funding round. And that round, all that work often gets set aside by the first angel investor or venture capitalist in the private equity world that they approach, who says, yeah, we'll give you the money, but you can do it our way. So we've seen time and time again, these business builders, as I call them, coming to us to say, hey, Adam, I want to get back control of the fundraising experience for my clients. So yeah, to answer your question, we see huge opportunities for collaboration amongst incubators, accelerators, pretty much the same thing, CPAs, attorneys, marketing firms, business brokers, real estate organizations, all directly engaging with their investors instead of using an intermediary to find them investors when they need them, always being ready to recognize and capitalize on the fact that we're seeing the rise of the investor.
Very, very right. Nice.
Adam, I have one last question before we close out this podcast.
Sure.
If someone is interested in doing a Reg A, a Reg CF plus, let's say with you guys, and you know, you mentioned before, I think it was at the minimum, the maximum was $5 million. Let's say they want to go for like $1 million or whatever, and all of a sudden their company's successful, they're growing, and now they need to do another raise of money. Can they do another Reg CF plus, or do they have to go to Reg A, or how would that work?
There's a lot of things that are going to come together to make your decision for you. Certainly they can do another round just like they did. That might be fine depending on what they're looking for. The average business loan is about $750,000 to get a business started. 97% of businesses use an SBA loan to get started, and most of those loans are less than $1 million. So it's rare to find somebody who really needs a lot of money. Where we usually see it is in real estate. We're talking about a $2 to $6 million building, but even then with our approach, we're only funding the down payment through investment. We're using a bank to do a mortgage because it just makes more sense. So they can certainly do that. The reason to go Reg A plus is you already have a overwhelming amount of social capital. You've got something that is really huge already. You've got a large Facebook following. You've got a large cadre of users already, and you simply want to monetize that. The expenses are very high to go out there and reach that number of people if you haven't already. Some of the best parts of the Reg A Plus have been rolled into the new law where you're able to do what they call a test the waters campaign, where you're really not taking anybody's money, but you're able to court investors with more specific information than you were allowed to do before. You used to be able to say, hey, we're raising money someday. You want to do that? And, you know, who would say yes? It's so open-ended and so unspecific. You really wouldn't get into it. But you're now able to, to say, there's no limits, but you're now able to say, if we were to do this and get X and Y and you would get Z, would you participate and when? You're able to do that, and the engagement the platforms offer is a little bit tighter. These Test the Waters campaigns are really a great first step. And that really lets you know, A, how much money you can get overall, and B, should you do it in stages? One of the things we're very proud of is our ability to counsel an issuer. Remember I said the one about if he thinks we just equity. We look at what an equity's future is, and this is a business coaching background that I have coming into this, and say, is the investment, the issuer decisions you're going to make today and the money you're going to get tomorrow going to hurt you getting money 5 years from now? Because there's an awful lot of deals out there that can do just that. I spoke with a firm just last week that had a great loan, 2.5% for $3 million. That's a crazy cheap business loan. Swiss Bank, is a great company, but I said, they're going to hamstring you if this thing grows the way I think it will grow. It's a fantastic music opportunity. Those things tend to be explosive if they work. You're going to outgrow that funding pretty quickly, and you won't be able to get more. So, decided to do another deal with him.
Yeah, that's when they go to Vegas and they bet it all on red, on the roulette red, all right? That's common knowledge, right?
Yeah, but, you bring up a good point, Ron, which is that so many people think of this as, hey, we stick this thing up there and maybe we'll get money. And I think that's crap. You shouldn't go through that kind of work to maybe get money. Maybe get money.
Yeah.
Right. If your job is to find
the
funding.
Anything to maybe be successful. You should do everything to be successful, period.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. There's got to be a lot of issuers, investors, accredited, non-accredited, listening to this podcast right now. And I would really recommend that they get in touch with you, Adam. What's the best way for someone to reach you?
Best way is the old-fashioned way, adam.pressman at crowdfundroundup.com. So, it's a long one, crowdfundroundup.com. But that's
isn't
the best way.
Isn't it great where the web address, the email address, is the old-fashioned way now? Right? Isn't it crazy?
Yeah. Well, we've got a website. They're going to steer you to our two platforms. As I said, we don't typically work with issuers directly. I mean, we'll work with issuers directly if they come to us. I'm not trying to tell anybody not to contact me. But because we don't have a direct outreach system, I don't have a website. I have a website called regcfplus.com, but it's informational. If you're a business builder, if you're a platform owner, a regulation crowdfunding platform owner, or if you're an investor, I champion you going to regcfplus.com and reading our white paper there that Professor Stein wrote, signing up, because as we are building this process to either go to market via all the other platforms, as I said, I spoke with three of them this week so far, there's only 29 or 30 of them that are active. We'll either work with them and their issuers so that they're between us and you, because they're sort of the place where it all happens, or we'll work with somebody who is going to put something on a platform in the future or start a campaign in the future and wants to talk to us first. So those are two ways to get through to us. Either way, email's the best.
Didn't you also mention Equitize? Isn't that yours as well?
It is. I don't want to toot my own horn too much, but EquitizeUSA.com is an investment crowdfunding platform. It is designed to put U.S. accredited investors in touch with worthy opportunities overseas, where we saw a gap in Hong Kong and Singapore. You could advertise an investment, but you couldn't close the deal. You couldn't actually put money on it. I mean, that's crazy. Those people should be able to invest just like everywhere else. So we provide an opportunity for those companies to invest in get U.S. investors for their overseas ventures. And then Syndicate Path is a real estate-focused crowdfunding platform. We're going to very much steer Syndicate Path in the Reg CF Plus direction, because we think it's a boon for a great real estate broker who knows lots of great buildings he'd like to buy with other people's money and has, say, 100 to 200 people who bought and sold homes with him that might be interested in doing small investments in their town. We think that's a tremendous way to get real estate property sold.
Yeah, that is really nice. Vicki, listen, before this podcast started, I had no idea that there was a Reg CF Plus term, and now I know. So I think we broke some major news today. I'm just going to say that we broke it on the internet, okay?
This is a true fact, Ron, and let me say this. Crowdfunding is not easy. It's expensive, it's difficult, and if you're going to go through the process, a company issuer needs to save themselves a lot of stress, hire someone like Adam who can help them take their project, be successful quickly, be successful economically, and be successful, period. Besides, any company that has Irwin Stein on the team, they're ahead of the game already.
Thank you so much. I'll share your kind words with Irwin. You're absolutely right, Vicki, and you know, thank you so much for including us among them. There are some great people to work with, but you've got to pick them and work with them. Whether you come to me and we help you, or we steer you to somebody who's a better fit, we're happy to do that, because what we don't want to see is this fantastic way of getting capital on your own terms to fail. I don't think it's in any danger of failing, but it isn't yet of the potential it could be.
Or if you try to do it yourself because you think you know how to, and then you have to start over three times.
Yeah.
Vicki, you're talking to way too many CEOs. That's a familiar response. But anyway, listen, Adam, thanks again for being a guest on the show today. I really appreciate you taking the time out and everything. Vicki, thanks for co-hosting this show with me. Folks, you're listening to the Mappable USA podcast at mappableusa.com. If you go to that website, scroll down a little bit, you'll see all our syndication sources. Just pick the one you like best, subscribe, and you'll never miss another one of our episodes. If you want to be a guest of the show like Adam was today, there's a guest tab there. Fill that out. We'll see what you can do about getting you on the show. And if you like what you heard today, send us an email at info@mappableusa.com. Or just leave a comment on whatever page you're listening to this on right now. So thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. We'll be at you next time with another Mappable USA episode. Have a great week, everyone.
Streaming your favorite shows, movies, live sports, breaking news, exclusive originals, and every live WWE pay-per-view. It's The Office, Chrisley Knows Best, and Peacock original shows like Punky Brewster. Peacock, watch for free, upgrade for more. Stream now at peacocktv.com.